Guess what day it is.
The 3-1. Lined into right field. That'll rattle around. Bryant scores easily. Rizzo held it third. And it's a two-run ball game with nobody out in the ninth. Back up the middle and through. Rizzo scores. Here's Zobrist, and the Cubs have tied it here in the ninth. Baez singles back up the middle. Hayward's being waved around, and Chicago has taken a 6-5 lead. Cubs are a strike away from moving on in the postseason. And the Chicago Cubs are moving on to the National League Championship Series.
Bruce Bochy's giant head exploded. Why didn't I leave Matt Moore in? Why didn't I leave Moore in? Baseball season's underway. Well, you better get ready for a brand new day. Hey, Chicago, what do you say? The Cubs are gonna win today. And it even ended at a reasonable hour. Cubs win.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
All right, I bailed. I'm going to be honest. I bailed 5-2 in the eighth. 5-2 in the eighth, and I said, no, they'll win it Thursday. They'll win it Thursday at home.
11:07 p.m.
That's reasonable. Yeah. On a West Coast game. Mm-hmm.
And sure. Then you had to watch the locker room celebration.
Yeah.
Oh, it was awesome. But I did see Kevin walking around the locker room.
What was he eating?
He was chewing gum.
Oh.
Let's try to focus on the fact that four runs were scored in the ninth.
How about that?
It's crazy.
It was same thing this team's done all year long. You know, it started last year. It's like, okay, you think you got them? No, they're kids. They're kids. They're kids playing Little League for millions of dollars, and they're just having fun. And thank goodness Bruce Bochy didn't leave the starting pitcher in, because otherwise they'd be coming home Thursday.
At least he gave every single one of his pitchers a chance to play before the end of their season.
I don't know what he was thinking. The guy's cruising along, and he decides to go for a bullpen, which has blown, I think, 32 saves this year.
Just as bad a bullpen as there is.
Yeah, and there you go. So Cubs come back. Cubs literally had one inning. They were terrible the entire night. They had one inning.
Javi Baez, though, and David Ross. Oh, my God.
Javi Baez stars is so hyper. He's awesome.
He's fantastic. His energy, high level.
The chiclets.
Take a breath, everybody.
You went to bed. What are you talking about?
Cubs.
I'm excited, and I went to bed.
No, take a breath on Javi Baez.
Oh, he's
it's
the
one
best.
Series. It's one
no,
series.
But
he's been pretty
consistent.
Good.
He needs to be in that lineup.
Okay, it's either strikeout.
He's cut
or
down
home
on
runs.
His. Oh yeah, no, he's
cut
good.
Down on his strikeout.
Okay, Mr. Baez.
I'll take the home run.
Yeah, but at least he's better.
And
I'll
take the defense.
Rizzo.
I'm not knocking him. I'm just saying there's a lot more to do here. You got one
true.
Series.
That's true. And you know who else is they're performing? Rizzo 1-for-15.
So he got on base in that ninth inning.
Yeah, and that's what counts.
Unacceptable.
Yeah, but he's making good plays at first. Come on.
Let's talk about what really matters. The Hawks open tonight. Rocky Wirtz will be in studio after 7:30 and to help us kick off another Hawk season. We will have every second, every line change, all of it. Coach Q on the show this morning as well. Coach will be with us all season long. The good news with the Cubs win and the Hawks opener is there's very little time for me to bash Trump today. So
I actually thought of that this morning.
So for the rest of you who are, you know, going, I'm really tired of you bashing Trump, Steve. I'll work it in. I'm just not sure where.
Yeah.
Coming up on 6:15, rest of the world, as it happened yesterday, mostly did revolve around politics. Let me just say one thing, though, about Julian Assange. Julian Assange should be on the other end of a Brent Seabrook bone-crushing check into the boards.
Right.
He's a criminal.
Completely is.
He's a criminal, and he's being reported as a news source again by CNN and other places this morning.
No, he's not.
So that's outrageous. He is not a journalist, and he is a criminal, and if somebody wanted to hack into your email, you wouldn't like it either. And by the way, I would say the same thing. Yes, I would. I would say the same thing if he was stealing Trump's email. Got no business doing it.
The Steve Cochran Show.
Come on! If you're going to say be sure to wear some flowers in your hair.
Live from the airport in San Francisco, escaping with a victory and a move to round two. Here's Kevin Powell. The key to a Cubs victory last night was Kevin. Really terrible thing. It's a terrible thing to say to a lifetime White Sox fan, but I say they don't win if you're not there.
I couldn't agree more, Steve. Me sitting in the press box absolutely had an impact on the game. So I'll go with that. I'll roll with that. I like it.
I think the question of the day, shockingly, has nothing to do with Donald Trump. The question of the day is, what was Bruce Boshe thinking?
Taking Matt Moore out? Is that
Yeah. Yeah, why put a bullpen in that are arsonists?
I mean, he threw 120 pitches. That's the most a starter's pitched in a postseason game in 5 years since Verlander threw 133. He had a three-run lead. I mean,
what are you saving him for? What do you know? You pitch him so he goes in, maybe walks the first guy, then you pull him, but at least give him a chance to finish it.
Yeah, I think it's a fair argument. I mean, obviously, you know, the more times batters see a pitcher, the more dangerous the batter becomes, and you had the heart of the lineup. But, yeah, it's a bullpen that blew 30 saves this year.
32, I think, was the number, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
32, yeah. Nine in September. That's not good. That's not good at all. That was the worst in majors by far. Yeah, I guess the fair argument. I mean, as Bruce Bochy put it, he just said simply he had done enough. It was time. So he pulled him out, and it backfired. The bullpen showed the whole nation how bad they really are, just completely imploding. You know, to me with the Cubs is, I mean, it's obviously it was an incredible comeback, and I think a lot of people were starting to panic. You know, it's like, okay, we're going back to Game Five. It's going to Wrigley. All the pressure's on the Cubs.
It's over.
I think that was all.
Imagine the panic if they had to come back to win tomorrow. It's over. Right. I knew this was going to happen. I knew it was too good to be true.
Right. Exactly. And I think all of that stems from past seasons, past Cubs blunders. But this is the 2016 Cubs. They're much different. They never really feel like they're out of a game. I know it's sort of a cliche, and they kept saying after the game they played 27 outs. But, I mean, look at the regular season finale. They had clinched everything, and they still found a way to score four runs in the ninth inning to beat the Reds. Look at two nights ago with Chris Bryant's homer tying it in the final inning.
That's the thing. It's nothing new to the Cubs. They're kids playing a kid's game, Dave. That's the deal.
Yeah, no question.
Except Ross.
Well, he's not a kid.
Somebody has to drive.
Somebody has to drive, and somebody has to hit the ball out of the park, too, which he did. Yeah. But about this time yesterday, one of our colleagues, who shall remain nameless, was getting on Joe Maddon for suggesting after the loss that you shouldn't be out there saying, yeah, we feel okay with this. You lost a game.
Which colleague was it?
Somebody nameless, Mark Harmon. So, you know, I think... What Maddon did after that loss was he took that pressure that you're talking about, and he said, look, we're going to be fine. It's just like reassuring somebody who's going through a bad stretch of luck, and you say, look, don't worry. Things are going to be okay. And
it's riding home in the car with your dad.
Yeah.
You're riding home in the car with your dad, and your dad's going, hey, tough day. It's tough day, Sparky, but you'll get him tomorrow night.
Because they got over that loss, and that was evident from the way they played last night. It didn't stay with them, and it could have stayed with them.
Yeah, and I think it also just sort of stems from the way they've sort of approached this whole season. I mean, John Lester talked about it. He says they don't not talk about the so-called curse or perceived curse, whatever you want to call it. It's not that they don't talk about it, but when they do talk about it, it's more of a joking matter. You know what I mean? They're not actually taking it serious, but they address it. It's not like they're hiding from it because there's nothing to hide from anyway. So that's the approach they have. And it's such a loose team. It's a loose environment all the time, but at the same time, they've remained laser focused. They know what the ultimate goal is. So it's the recipe that's obviously working for them.
When the Cubs win and they celebrate, there's no bigger nerd on the planet than Theo Epstein. And does he get in the middle of the sprayed champagne, or does he just stay out of that?
Yeah, he does. But there's a bigger nerd that was in there that I'll tell you off the air. But is it
my favorite nerd?
Yeah, it's your favorite.
You mean a player or a TV news?
Did his sweater get wet from champagne?
I'll fill you in later, but yeah, you know what I'm talking about. But yeah, Epstein, they love Theo, though. You know, they sort of mess with him.
Well, they should love him. Look what he built.
Right. Plus, you know, John Lester poured a beer on him midway through a little media scrum in the celebration, and yeah, John Lester should love him too because he got a $150 million contract because of Theo. But he's a numbers nerdy guy, but he fits in. There were some other people there. I wasn't exactly sure who they were, but they were much more nerdy than Theo Epstein.
I think Theo was
that's a bar.
Watching the locker room. By the way, Kevin, you look great on TV. I saw you walking around the locker room. Theo,
get that on your buzzer.
Theo dropped a couple of choice words, and I think it was five or seven. I was flipping back and forth on
Theo
TV.
Theo cursed?
Yeah, and they said, oh, sorry, it's live TV. We're just really caught up in the celebration. But then one of the TV stations, I think it was Peggy, who said that they ran out of champagne, Kev. True or false?
It went fast. When I walked in, they had those big, like, I don't know, I wouldn't call them industrial size cooler, but the ones if you're ever at like a big bank, the huge coolers that are sort of on stands, those were filled within minutes. There was just empty bottles and beer cans, beer bottles all over the floor. But as I was sort of leaving, there was a bunch of guys walking in with more beer, but that was when they were kind of wrapping up. They didn't waste any time spraying all the champagne that they could.
They would have had to haul that all back to Chicago.
Well, that's the thing, because the team on the road team, if you're going to clinch, the home team's not buying your champagne.
No.
You got to bring the champagne, right?
Yeah, I don't.
I mean, you're going to whatever Binny's is in San Francisco to pick it up.
Costco. I didn't know that we have to bring our own champagne.
Yeah, the Giants wouldn't pay for your champagne.
The home team isn't going to pay for the visitors to clinch.
We need to get Kevin some goggles.
Everyone, there were some media people wearing goggles. When we got back to the press box smelled a whole lot different from when you first leave to go down into the celebration room because everybody gets drenched. Fortunately, I had a few minutes to go home and shower and change before I got to the airport. But it was stinky. When you walk on, it was sort of a little carpet in the locker room. And when you're walking, it feels like you're walking through a basement that just flooded 6 inches, and it's all champagne and booze.
Do the Cubs have to clean up that, too, and pray for that cleanup?
Well, no, they don't have to mop up. No,
well,
there's
gosh,
a crew for that.
Yeah, the rookies, they dress them up in cheerleading outfits, and they mop.
I think it's a dine and dash situation. Just get on the bus, get on the plane, and get out of there.
Get out.
Well, let's talk about what really matters. The Blackhawks open tonight against the Blues. Who you got, Kev?
I'm going to go with the Blackhawks, Steve.
Good call. Solid move by you.
That's my prediction.
And nice work. Seriously, nice work. And I hope you're having fun on your first big baseball road trip for that really matters.
It was fun. Next, we'll see what L.A. and what happens with L.A. and the Washington Nationals today.
Let me tell you, if Washington wins today and you end up doing the road trip to D.C., I will endorse you for president.
Okay. I love that. I'll make the little lawn posters. I'll start getting them ready in the T-shirts and everything.
All right, but don't go yet because the game, first of all, isn't until tomorrow and the series will open at Wrigley Field anyway. So.
Yeah, but when he goes, I'm saying.
When he goes, yeah.
Right.
But it's not today.
And if you end up going to L.A. instead, I'll endorse you to be a new member of the Kardashian family. So either way, the first family on either coast.
He's got the right initials. Or first initial.
Okay, yeah.
You were up late, Dave. Okay. Don't worry about it. All right, Kev, get on a plane. See you.
I'll see you guys later.
That's Kevin Paul.
Do you think he got carded going into the clubhouse?
You've seen his face. Of course he did. We can't spray champagne on Kevin. He's not old enough. Cubs win, in case you missed it. 4 runs in the ninth. 6, and they move on. 6:29, back with the big story next on 720 WGN.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
Back in the 1990s, Trump apparently lost $1 billion in a single year on bad investments and failing casinos. Now, how anybody can lose a dollar, let alone $1 billion, in the casino industry is kind of beyond me, right?
Did you know that Donald Trump was rooting against housing because he wants housing to go down? Yeah, if it goes down, I'm going to buy you. I'm a businessman. That's what I'm supposed to do. That's what I'm supposed to do. And he wanted to buy housing when it was at a low point. Who the hell doesn't? I feel badly for everybody. What am I going to do? I'm in business, okay?
And any wonder, just based on those two clips, why people hate this campaign? I mean, she is so obnoxious, and he is so clueless. Oh, and by the way, a criminal. It's 6:41.
What's up with the people going, woo?
Well, those would be
I
his
took
30,
money from you. Woo!
35, 36, 37%. What about the people of Iowa? You remember when he called you guys stupid? He called you stupid and he's leading in Iowa. You know, was he right? I mean, you can answer that. At 6:41, you know what Amy Cochran and I, Amy was over last night and we watched The Choice 2016 on Frontline on PBS. It's good. It's good. Very fair, bounces back and forth. But it also shows some of the psychosis as it developed for both of these people growing up and some of the damage that his father and her father put on both of them as they were growing up. But I'd highly recommend it's called The Choice 2016. One of the people prominently featured in it is Roy Cohn. And I don't know, you probably got to be over 50 to know who Roy Cohn is. But Roy Cohn was a notorious, mean, vicious little creep of a lawyer who worked with Joe McCarthy and the Red Scare in the 50s and was a mob lawyer and was the mentor to Donald Trump until Roy Cohn called one day and told a select group of people that he had HIV. This is in the early 80s. And he wanted to keep quiet, but he had talked to Trump 15 to 20 times a day. And when Trump found out he had AIDS, dropped him and never talked to him again through his death, and I believe did not go to his funeral.
That's nice.
That's Ken McCallum knows more about Trump's ties than just about anybody. And Kenneth has a book out about it as well, which I want to mention. Give me the book title, Kenneth.
Yeah, it's The Essential Guide to Donald Trump.
Let me start in reverse order. Do I have anything about that Roy Cohn story wrong?
No, it was, that's very accurate. And certainly in the late 70s, early 80s, Roy Cohn as Donald Trump's mentor and really godfather, put him together and hooked him up with some major organized crime figures in New York that gave Donald Trump a leg up in the construction industry, particularly the construction of Trump Tower and Trump Plaza in Manhattan. And those organized crime ties were a subject of an investigation by the Justice Department Organized Crime Section, of which I was a member at that particular time.
And was there not enough to go criminal on it?
Well, we did go criminal on it, and not Donald Trump, but however, we indicted and convicted the head of the local Teamster 282 union, as well as John Cody, as well as other mob figures. However, quite frankly, Donald Trump, escaped indictment at that time, even though he refused to cooperate with our investigation.
Talking to Kenneth McCallion, The Essential Guide to Donald Trump, out and available everywhere. Get two copies. You're careless, you'll lose one. So Ken, the other thing that makes news today in regards to, well, both campaigns is whether or not there are ties to Russia and the Putin piece of this. Can you explain why Russia would want Trump to be president, in your opinion?
He has surrounded himself with some very pro-Putin people. I had a case against Paul Manafort, who I don't know why Trump hired him, but Paul Manafort was the chief advisor to a pro-Putin president of Ukraine, Yanukovych, who was overthrown in a popular revolution in February 2014. Manafort's no longer there, but it's a safe bet that he's still an advisor, and I could name you another four or five very close pro-Putin advisors that Trump has. And Donald Trump on the last Sunday said, I have nothing to do with Russia. Well, because a lot of the legitimate U.S. and Western European banks have refused to finance Trump projects after his bankruptcies. A lot of the Trump empire is really dependent on Russian, Ukrainian, Eastern European money invested by these wealthy oligarchs. who are basically using U.S.-based companies like the Trump Company for money laundering activities. And Donald Trump is very beholden to these pro-Putin oligarchs and Russian investors. So they are basically propping up his real estate holdings at this particular point. So no wonder Putin and his allies want their guy, Donald Trump, in the White House.
Ken, can you explain a little bit how Trump is so able to walk the legal line so well, both with the taxes, you know, filing bankruptcy, losing money, but not paying federal taxes for 18 years, Trump University as well? I mean, how does he skate that very thin line?
A little bit of luck and a little bit of Trump magic. When I was with the organized crime section, our focus were corrupt labor leaders and organized crime-controlled cement companies and construction companies, and we were successful on that. But sadly, corrupt real estate developers like Donald Trump were given a pass. I would suspect that the Trump magic, as far as avoiding indictment and serious legal consequences, is going to run out. The attorney general here in New York has a pretty serious investigation of the fraud involving Trump University, and I don't think we're going to see anything before the election.
There's a diversion. There's a thing about his behavior which is fascinating and frightening at the same time, and that's this pod kettle thing, where he could be guilty or accused of being guilty of the exact same thing he's screaming about his opponents being guilty of. So therefore, it takes the attention off his. And here's a very current affairs example. There's a woman who was 13 years old at the time. She accused Donald Trump of raping her. That case will likely go to civil trial in New York as soon as December, with the potential president-elect. I mean, you can't make it up, Ken. I mean, this is the kind of year we're living in.
Well, I think you're absolutely correct. The best thing that Trump could do, if he's lucky enough to be president, I don't think he will be, but I suppose he's going to have to start pardoning himself. If he doesn't have the immunity of the presidency, he's going to be in for a lot of trouble.
I never thought about that. Could you pardon yourself if you're president, or do you have to wait till the end of your term? Because that's the tradition. Before we let you go, in addition to all of this, there is the South Florida contractors issue, the Atlantic City contractors issue. There's plenty of stuff about illegal labor, but then there's the notion that he didn't pay the people that work for him what they were owed. So you could go to the argument that, well, it's tough luck. The casinos went bankrupt. It's tough for the small businesses that went out of business. But it's not tens. There's hundreds of businesses that didn't get paid what they were owed for the job that they did, whether it was in South Florida or in Atlantic City. How was any of that legal, or is that all just subject to civil action as well, where a small-time guy that's owed 10 grand can't afford to hire the attorney?
Well, I think that's part of it, but also really the courts are to blame. In the bankruptcies in Atlantic City, Trump did very well. He was able to continue pulling management fees out of those casinos, even though they were in bankruptcy. Meanwhile, the contractors who had built the place and the workers got pennies on the dollar. So, unfortunately, you know, our bankruptcy system worked very well for Donald Trump and others, and very poorly for working men and women.
You know, and I want people to understand, the essential guide to Donald Trump is out and available, and you can grab it anytime wherever books are sold. But at the end, here we are less than a month away from Election Day, and it looks like she could run away with this at this point. Having said that, it all comes down to turnout, and we know there's no more motivated people to turn out than those who believe Trump no matter what he says, and disbelieve those who question Trump no matter what they say. You know, Hillary Clinton's got to get people to turn out if she expects to win this thing. I don't care if it leads 10 points or 20 points.
Well, that's absolutely true. Polls don't vote, people vote. So if we don't have a turnout, we're going to live with some very sad consequences. Meanwhile, the Trump people, the I hate to say it, the deplorables that Hillary Clinton is walking back on, but a lot of fringe groups, neo-Nazis, white supremacist groups, are deplorable, and they're going to be turning out for Trump. So if we want to keep him out of the White House, I strongly suggest people turn out on Election Day.
Ken, I thank you. Good luck with the book.
Thanks so much, Steve.
The Essential Guide to Donald Trump. That's Kenneth McCallion.
By the way, a president can pardon himself.
Well, they can.
But they can't pardon an impeachment. So people are saying, why didn't Bill Clinton pardon himself? You can't pardon an impeachment. No president has ever attempted to pardon himself.
That'd be awkward. Yeah.
Yes, it would be awkward.
And we'll pick this up when, in regards to the economy, and see. We'll play a game that's really uncomfortable called Who Will Damage the Economy More? With money expert Jordan Goodman after 7. Is it Hillary or is it Donnie J? Who will crush us monetarily more?
You got to go and register, or we've really, you know, we're doing something that's incredible. It's a movement. But if we don't win, all it is a little asterisk in history. There's never been anything like this. So go and register. Make sure you get out and vote November 28th.
And I'm proud to be an American, where at least I know I'm free.
November 8th is actually Election Day. Let's talk about anything else. I'll give you a choice. You tell me which story you'd like to hear. Ken Bone, Ronald McDonald, or Billy Bush? Ken Bone, Ronald McDonald, or Billy Bush? Dave?
I would go with Billy Bush, Steve.
Billy Bush. Andrea?
I'm going to go with Ken Bone.
Ken Bone to break the tie, Mary.
Billy Bush.
Billy Bush.
Yes.
Billy Bush is in negotiations, or his people are, with NBC to no longer be on NBC. Now, there was this crazy idea that Billy Bush was going to replace Matt Lauer.
Oh, yeah.
With all the credibility of his time at Access Hollywood. Right. But after the tape came out of he and Trump last Friday, obviously credibility isn't his biggest problem. His biggest problem is, you know, working anywhere. So, listen, I'm torn on this because he came out immediately. He said, I was an immature jerk. I apologize. I've got daughters. I'm embarrassed by this. And, you know, I can't say I'm sorry enough. But he couldn't be an oilier little weasel that he is on this tape. But how fair is it that you go back 11 years on a guy that's not running for president and say you're out? Well, here's why you have to do it. Because in everybody's contract, I have it. Anybody that signs a contract with a big media company, there's a clause in there that says if you embarrass the company, and it's not date specific, it's not today and going forward, if you embarrass the company or put the company in a position to suffer harm, public humiliation, things of that nature, we can fire you.
Yeah.
So it doesn't matter that it's 11 years old. What matters is that it was found. And there's a rumor that he was said to have been talking about knowing about this tape months and months and months ago. So forget about the fact that Jeb Bush was his cousin and he never told Jeb. If he knew that was out there, I'd be deeply concerned about it getting out. And I'd do whatever I can to get a producer at NBC to slip me every copy he has before it comes out and ruins his career.
Completely.
Even though he's covering entertainment on NBC, isn't he still an employee of NBC News, which also might not feel too good about having...
About not getting the tape?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
There's that. Yeah.
But even that's though we covered entertainment, it's a Weasley thing to do. It's a nasty comment. I mean, look at Dean Richards, who's our entertainment critic and reporter.
Well, you've
never
the tapes
said anything
on him.
Like that. No, but you know what I mean. You know, it's the same type of thing. He embarrassed the company. I never liked him. He was always kind of a weasel.
I'm sure you like him less now.
Yeah.
A couple of minutes before 7, we'll talk money after the news on 720 WGN.
You're listening to The Steve Cochran Show, live from the Allstate Showcase Studio in downtown Chicago on 720 WGN.
Seven-Eleven now. All right, so the question is, which of these two fine candidates for the White House will destroy the economy faster? I've seen stories that said that Hillary Clinton's elected, millions and millions and hundreds of millions of dollars will go out of the stock market very, very quickly. I've also seen stories say if Trump's elected, it's trillions of dollars. Jordan Goodman is standing by. MoneyAnswers.com is a resource that is invaluable to me, and it will be to you, too, if you go there, because all your money answers are there. And, oh, and by the way, you listeners to this show, you hundreds of thousands of listeners to this show, you send Jordan an email, he will write you back. He'll be in touch with you. Good morning, Jordan.
Good morning, and that is true. And I not only write him back, I call him. I love to talk to your listeners all the time.
At one point, and he doesn't do this with everybody, he moved in with a family to get him set up.
Yeah, that was very helpful, yeah. Actually. They enjoyed that. Yeah. Yeah. I didn't have to pay rent either. I just gave them financial advice. It worked out really well.
All right, let's talk about the state of the markets right now and the state of the economy today before we get to the presidential stuff.
Things are weakening, Steve.
Oh,
clearly.
Great. Fantastic.
Things are weakening. Retail sales have been weak. Car sales have been down. The housing market has been okay, but there's not enough inventory for people to buy, so even home sales have been down. The GDP grew at 1.4%, probably even weaker than that in the third quarter. That's why the Federal Reserve did not raise rates in September, and I don't think they're going to raise rates in December either. There's just too much signs of weakness out there. Part of it, I think, is all the uncertainty about this crazy election season, because people have no idea what's going to happen. I mean, I think it's clearer now with the Access Hollywood. I mean, who would have thought, Steve, that an Access Hollywood tape would decide the election? But that's the way it seems.
I'm just tired of that same old story. Presidential cycle after presidential cycle, Access Hollywood taking down good people.
That's right. But that's the way it seems to be happening this day. So, I mean, assuming that Clinton wins big, the question now is what kind of Congress she's going to have to deal with. And with the open split in the Republican Party, with Ryan and Trump spitting at each other, which has never happened before either, I think it could affect the down market in several ways. First of all, Republicans may not show up at all because they're so disgusted with both sides. And I think some people would vote Democratic just to get back at all the, you know, vitriol inside the Republican Party. So let's for the moment say that happens, okay? Say even the Democrats win the Senate and the House. I'm not sure it's going to happen, but say it did. That would be a major change in the way we've been going, because we basically had gridlock for the last 6 years. I mean, the only thing President Obama's been able to do has been by executive order, and some of those things have been overturned, like the immigration and other areas. The only thing he really got done during his term, when you get down to it, was Obamacare and Dodd-Frank in the first 2 years, because he had a Democratic Senate. But if Clinton got a full boat, then all things she's talking about, raising taxes, increasing regulations in various ways, all of what she's talking about would happen. That would scare Wall Street. That's why the market went down yesterday. The day before, it went up because people feel, well, it's better to have the devil we know than the devil we don't know. And now officially, Clinton is a devil because Trump called him a devil. So
right, and he's never wrong. and this is why I keep harping on people. You got to vote. You got to vote. People, you do. And even,
right.
even if you choose not to vote for president, which, by the way, you can do. You don't have to fill that part in. But the Congress affects your life more every single day than the White House does.
Yeah.
So get out and vote. We got a big Senate race here. You have congressional districts. You've got, you know, your local races. So you
I think the third parties may get more. I think Gary Johnson may get more than people think, kind of out of disgust from both of them.
Gary Johnson won't be able to vote because he won't be able to find the polling place.
That's
what is the polling place?
He could ask Vincente Fox where to find it. Yes.
Yeah. So these are scary times, obviously. But yeah. Let's say that things change between now and November 8th. And Trump wins.
Okay.
What happens?
What the markets are worried about with Trump is a trade war. That's the main thing. Because say he follows through with what he's talking about and threatens China and Japan and Mexico and all our major trading partners, that if you don't, you know, give in to me and give us so-called better deals, that we're going to put huge tariffs on you, 45% tariffs and so on. First of all, I don't think he's going to get these wonderful deals. Okay. And I don't think he's going to so-called bring back these jobs.
The president doesn't have the power to end a trade deal.
Correct.
I mean, you have to have Congress to do that.
In theory, you do, yes. You can't just kind of wipe away,
right.
rip up NAFTA, as he calls
right.
it. It's just not even legally possible. But I'm just saying, say for some miracle he actually did it, okay, and he ripped up NAFTA and he, you know, imposed sanctions on China and Japan, that would cause a worldwide depression, okay, because we'd have a major decline in trade, which has already been on the weak side anyway. This has been done before. In the Depression, they had these so-called Smoot-Hawley tariffs, which is what brought on the Depression. We raised tariffs, other countries raised tariffs, trade went down dramatically, and that caused a worldwide depression. So I think it would be the same. So that's, I think, the main thing that Wall Street's worried about if Trump took over and actually implemented what he's talking about.
Jordan, the market always fluctuates after an election. I get that. And then there's an autocorrect. But is there anything that we can do, kind of like those preparing for, say, a hurricane, mm-hmm. when they batten down the hatches, board up the windows? Is there anything that we can do ahead of time right now?
Actually, that's a good idea. Plywood.
Right. Plywood would be
plywood. Plywood would be a good call. All right, yeah. Jordan, hold that thought because that segues into the next segment nicely. What should people be doing right now?
I will do.
Right now. Run!
I need a dollar, dollar, dollar. That's what I need. Hey, hey. Well, I need a dollar.
7:21, the chairman, Rocky Wirtz, joins us in just a couple of minutes. Before we do that, though, let's continue the discussion of who will destroy the economy first. Oh, God help us all. All right, Jordan Goodman, what should we be doing regardless of who you support or don't support?
Time to hide out because it's very volatile. You don't know what's going to happen right after the election, depending on how things go. So I say put your money in something safe where you're going to get a decent
yield. A jar in the backyard?
A jar is good, but no, even better, I've mentioned this before, it's been very popular with your listeners, commercial real estate income funds, and there's a website for that, commercialrealestateincomefunds.com. You get 8% yield, minimum hold times 18 months. You can take monthly checks if you like. You can reinvest them if you like. No fees whatsoever, no market fluctuations. Instead of having your money sitting in a bank account earning zero, or bonds, interest rates have been rising lately, meaning you're going to get losses in bonds and wildly volatile stocks. There's a nice safe place. You can ride it out.
Is
and
the
not have to worry about it.
8% guaranteed?
I wouldn't use the word guaranteed, which is an FDIC kind of term, but highly, highly secure. They're lending, the maximum they lend is 70% against the value of a commercial property that's being improved somehow. And you actually get a piece of the profits when they sell the building at a profit. So
barring an apocalyptic meltdown post-election, this is a safe bet.
It is. I'll just give an example of one of the projects they did recently. They had a guy who had a big house in a university town that he was renting out to two people. He got a loan from this fund, renovated it, so a year later he could rent it out to four students. He kind of reconfigured the house, four bathrooms, four kitchens, four doors. So a year later, the property is worth double or, you know, dramatically more because he's got four incomes instead of two. So it's not really dependent on, you know, the stock market or interest rates or anything like that. They're helping people improve their properties in a way that makes economic sense. So it's kind of separate from all the craziness going on in Washington.
One more before we run out of time. You know, all of us lost half of our 401ks and after 9/11, and then depending on whatever recovery you had, you lost half of that in 2007 and 2008.
Mm-hmm.
So we're sitting here now with a big question of what's going to happen on November 9th and beyond. There's not a lot you can do with a 401k. You know,
but you can go into cash
overnight. I mean, well, that's my question. Should people consider going cash?
I don't think so, because in the long run, stocks do best. Obviously, they're volatile day to day. But particularly if you're younger, meaning like 50 or younger, something like that, in the long run, stocks is where you want to be. So you're doing dollar cost averaging by doing a 401k. Every time you pay, you put money into it, you buy more shares when they're down and fewer shares when they're up. So you're automatically doing the smart thing without even thinking about it, which is always the best way to do it. So in the long run, stocks are going to do better. Cash is going to stay zero. Bonds is going to stay 1%, 2%, something like that. So, yes,
and regardless
I would
if
do
you
individual
watch,
ones. I would not do these target funds, by the way.
Don't do those.
No.
All right, and regardless if you watch Fox or MSNBC, the United States will not be out of business on November 9th.
Just I don't think so.
Don't look at your portfolio for
a
while.
I mean, the irony, Steve, is that we, as crazy as we are here, we are still considered the beacon of stability around the world. You see what's going on in Europe with Brexit and all of that. And I think, you know what the next one's going to be? It's going to be Frexit, okay? Because if the French, if Marine Le Pen, who's the far right-wing person called the National Front in France, wins, and they have their election next year, and right now she's leading, she would probably want to pull France out of Europe because the right wing is very anti-European. So after Brexit, we may have Frexit. How about that? You heard it here first.
All right. Well, Frexit to you. Jordan Goodman, moneyanswers.com. Thanks for the education.
Very good. Always glad to help, Steve.
Rocky Wirtz in a moment on 720 WGN. 727, the chairman, Rocky Wirtz, is here. First off, And I told you this at the Blackhawks golf outing. You look great.
Well, thank you.
Are you working out or what are you doing?
I'm trying to lose weight. It's easier said than done.
No, it's working.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, you look fabulous. Here's the deal. I don't know if you're aware of this, but you're opening another championship season tonight. And
if your mouth to God's ears.
I have never felt more optimistic or positive about this team. I don't know why. I just got a really good feeling about this season.
Well, you know, Eva, you're never as good until you play your first game. But I'll tell you one thing. It's going to be a good team. I think the youth will be exciting. It'll be a breath of fresh air. At the back end, the defense and the goaltending is going to be really good. And it's going to be, a very, very fun year. And I can't wait to start tonight.
Andrea, say hi to Rock.
Rocky, how exciting are you? How excited are you for the youngsters too?
Well, it
Oh, I love
it. It's like having kids around the house. It takes all the seriousness out of it. And I think it's going to be good in the locker room. I think it'll be good on the ice, and they're excited. And I think it'll be good. I think it's good when you have the veteran players have younger players around them.
It's funny to call Kane a veteran now, isn't it?
In
the
something?
Rifle age of
Kane and Taves, the old man.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. His hair's trim. Yeah. He's going back. I mean, my God,
no more mullet.
No mullet.
Kane and Taves come in and go, "I'd like to talk about my 401k, right. Rocky."
Yeah, they can't stay up too late to watch the Cubs.
Rocky, we get dental, don't we?
As long as they don't have to worry about arthritis, we're fine.
Right.
But, what's true with this team is that they are well-rested. I mean, I know the guys were up at the World Cup, and some have been busy, but the other guys were already in training camp when that was going on. But given the amount of hockey these guys have played over the last, 6-7 years, this has to have been good for them from just a rehabilitation standpoint.
And, Dave, I think not only on the physical side, but I think the mental side, because, you have to – it's like anything. Mentally you have to get your head in the game, and I think that has a lot to do with it. And I think that, after the first month it's one thing physically, but mentally to let yourself train down and then bring yourself back up, I think that has a lot to do with it, too.
Are you lucky or really smart when it comes to this organization that you've built? Because you look at everybody from Coach Q back up through Jay and John and everybody. I mean, you got all the right guys in all the right spots, and obviously Stan.
Well, we've been very fortunate, and I think the nice thing about the organization is everyone works together. I mean, no one can do any better by anyone doing any worse, and that permeates throughout the locker room and throughout the whole organization, and I think that's what's nice about it. No one's here plays a blame game. If you have a bad game or a bad day, so what? We're all here to chip in and help each other, and I think that that's what you see, and we've been very, very fortunate.
But you've never liked Pete Hassan. Is that an official opinion?
It's only because he's a foot taller than everyone else.
He just got a promotion, by the way, our buddy Pete.
Yeah, he's a kid with him. He's a full vice president now, and that just
How about that? All right, so here's the deal. Texters, 312-981-7200. If you want to say hi to Rock, you want to wish him well, you've got a question, I'll try to get to as many of those as we can when we come back. We'll do the big story in a second, and then more with Rocky Wirtz. And since Rocky was nice enough to come in today, I got him a nice bottle of cold duck.
Really?
Yeah. Very, I know people
really
in the beverage
nice of
business.
You, Steve.
Yeah. That's what friends are for, Rocky Wirtz.
Wow. Did you have a sip of it?
No, I wouldn't possibly open it and ruin it for you. It's a 2016.
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
Kane's got the puck. Moves with it, top of the right wing circle, and shoots. He scores! Patrick Kane! Centers for Kane. He scores! From beside the net! Seabrook then sends it ahead. Panarin over the blue line. The Kane right circle shoots. He scores! Patrick for Patrick Kane! Gave it to Kane, top of the right circle. To the right circle. Terravine into Kane. Left circle. Shoots. He scores! Make it 25 straight games with a point. Seabrook then sends it ahead. Panarin over the blue line. The Kane right circle shoots. He scores! Trick for Patrick Kane, and that's his 100th point this season. Patrick Kane scores his second hat trick of the season.
It's a love song from your Blackhawks. Rocky Wirtz is here. Rocky, I know you don't get a chance to hear Weidemann and Troy in their full, lunacy other than when the team's on the road. But this is such a good radio thing. Obviously, we're so appreciative of the partnership and how good it is for both of us. But just having them on WGN is fantastic.
Well, it's nice. I mean, with the range it has, especially in the evenings. I mean, it goes through half the country or three quarters of the country,
sure.
And through Canada. The amount of people that listen to the Blackhawk games is amazing. And it's just not just a Metro Chicago. I mean, this team is going. You see the fan support we have on the road, and I'm sure that WGN has a lot to do with it.
Here's some text for you. Guys like Rocky and Theo getting it done. Rocky, could you please call the McCaskies? 773.
I don't think we're going to do that.
No. Just a helpful listener. 773. Just a thank you to Rocky for bringing hockey back. I know people have been saying that for years, but you got to feel good about it every time you hear it, I'm sure.
Well, we had some lean years, and the nice thing is how everything, you know, came together. We've been very, very fortunate, and we have to thank the fans. They stuck with us and believed in the future, and they've been very, very supportive.
630, Steve, you were supposed to buy Rocky Harvey's Bristol Cream. Nothing but top shelf for you, sir. And then this is a good question. When you were growing up as a kid, we were just talking about this off the air. As a kid in the family, but a Blackhawks fan, what's your favorite kid memory of you as a little kid of the team?
Well, it's funny. We were talking about this with Bobby the other day. My brother Peter would take Bobby Hull would sign autographs and little slips of paper, and then my brother Peter would sell them for a buck. And so Bobby would saw him one day in the hall and said, "So, don't I get a little commission off of that?" So my brother did is he would take dimes and scotch tape them to a pieces of paper, and then, you know, he'd bring the 10 dimes in and give them to Bobby.
How great is that? That would be an early transaction in the Wirtz Empire.
Yes, exactly. I mean, and I'm surprised Bobby settled for 10%.
Yeah, so am I. Dave, you got a question?
Well, knowing that memory is still vivid for you and interaction with fans has been such a part of the Blackhawks' success. I mean, you go to the convention every summer, and does it ever surprise you the way these guys are able to connect with the fans, whether it's signing every autograph that they're asked to sign or talking with young fans or visiting with kids who've maybe had a rough time?
Well, you know, I think what's nice about it, that we're fortunate enough that the players realize that fame is like vapor, and that they have empathy, that they were those kids one day waiting in line and trying to get a glimpse of someone or someone who's maybe not as fortunate as they are. And the nice thing is that they don't ask for any credit. They don't ask for any fanfare. They don't have an entourage. They don't have a camera around them so that people can realize what they're doing. They're doing it out of the goodness of their heart. And that's where we're so fortunate with these players and the kind of values that they have. And I think that the fans pick up on those values. You can't teach someone to be genuine. And those players are genuine, and they actually mean it from their heart.
Speaking of genuine, are you going to keep that series alive? I loved watching Coach Q bring hockey to the senior living facility and then Duncan Keith skating
so
with Cammy. Those videos are so heartfelt. And, you know, those are shared millions of times all over Twitter and Facebook.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, it is, because these are things that and our players want to appear in these different ads, and they don't get paid a nickel for them. They just do it, you know, because they think it's important. They know it's important to grow the game, and they know it's important to relate to different people. And everyone has a goal in life and what they want to do. And if they can be part of that goal, they want to be part of it. And that's what's so nice about it.
Yeah, you know, there's a thing about hockey, and I always just equate it to, you know, it's how you were brought up. You know, you got good parents, and a lot of these kids come from good Canadian farm families or Northern American farm families. They're just hardworking kids, right? But by the same token, they're millionaires. They could go south if they want. So I give credit to the organization, too. It's got to have something to do with Stan and Q and John and the way the on-ice part is structured as well.
Well, it's funny. Last night I was out for dinner, and I went to a restaurant, and Patrick Kane was there with his girlfriend. And so I went over to the waiter and said, I'd like to pick up his check. So when the check came at the time, and Patrick was nice enough and came over and thanked me very much, well, sure enough, what he did is he picked up my check.
Wow. Nice touch. That's look how he's all grown up.
Yeah.
And the trouble is he left a bigger tip than I would have.
So, well, that's a very nice move by you. But at any point, as you're going, I'm going to pick up the check and go, hold on a second, I just remembered what I'm paying him.
I don't think there's too many other teams that anyone would pick up the owner's check, I'll tell you that.
Well, it's very true. And you have made a point over the years of staying out of the dressing room. Is that still what you do?
Absolutely. It's not my office. I always kid about it. The next time I'm in the locker room is after the last game when you win the Stanley Cup. Then you go to the locker room. But until that, the last thing the players want to see is ownership. And I stay as far away from them as possible, not because I just don't think it's appropriate, and they're certainly always welcome in our office, but I don't think that's appropriate. Where they're not there to entertain ownership, they're there to, you know, do their job and to win hockey games.
He's a lot like Jerry Jones, like that. He just doesn't want to get involved.
Oh yeah.
We got a lot of texts about Stan Mikita. And, you know, there's not a lot to tell here other than the fact that his family is around him and he's and see him. And we keep saying prayers. That's all.
Exactly. We support him and wish him well. And you know that our prayers with him. And as you said, he has a great family and the support structure he has around him. And that's the important thing.
And at 7:45, we'll take a break for traffic. We'll come back. Got a few more minutes with Rocky Wirtz, the chairman. Where will you be tonight? In your normal seats?
Section 119, seat number 3.
I'm amazed he ever gets to his seats with everybody that wants to stop and shake your hand and stuff and take your picture. But you don't miss any of them, do you?
Well, it's better than a process server coming.
7:46.
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
Welcome back. Your dreams were your ticket out. Welcome.
Rocky Wirtz is here, the chairman of your Chicago Blackhawks. Does it ever get old?
No, I'd like to say yes, but no, it doesn't. I mean, we're, you know, I said it with the season starting today. I can't wait, and it's no, it never gets old.
If you haven't been by the United Center lately, and of course this was going on last season, but an awful lot of construction taking place there. What should fans expect who are showing up for the game tonight? What are they going to see?
Well, they're going to see we call it the office building on the east side, and that now it's all the glass is up, and then we're working on the atrium. That should be open after the first of the year. We'll move over the offices which are in the United Center. We'll be going over to the new building, and then we're going to repurpose those other buildings too. But the most exciting thing away for hockey fans is two blocks away is we got the Blackhawk new practice facility, community ice rink. And that should be by December of 17. We'll have two ice surfaces. And the Hawks only practice about 4 to 5% of the time. And the rest of the time will be for the community, both boys and girls learning to skate and a whole 360 program, which we're excited about.
That's going to be great.
You know, for both fitness, health, understanding, you know, nutrition, what that means, commitment to your team, to yourself, to your family. And I think this should be really something good for the community and good for the city of Chicago.
Speaking of the stuff that doesn't involve the Stars, Andre and I have talked about this, and I mentioned this to John and Jay, we want Andre to come over, Rock, with a camera crew and to show what it takes to put a game on for everybody that's not involved with the product on the ice, from the concessionaires to the ushers to, you know, the ticket folks,
putting
to everybody else.
Putting the ice
down to all of it. So we'll probably do that. But you mentioned the office building. Did you get a normal size? People don't know this. And I don't know about the Bulls side. I think I've been over there a couple times. But Rocky's in a supply closet. Yeah. I mean, the office, the size, for a building the size of United Center, you guys are in one side of the building. The Bulls are on the other. But these are small, tiny offices. You can have like a normal office now?
Well, yeah. It's funny. I kid with John McDonough. I see he has the big corner office. It's not bad, but I call it a suite of rooms where I'm lucky my new office is about the size of your, you know, monitor in front of you.
But John's big office is about 15 by 20 feet with an IKEA couch in the corner.
Well, but he invites me in so that I could, you know, that I can sit there and solve all the world's problems.
Sure. Of course. Andre.
And the ambassadors, too. We have to give a shout out. You'll love this. I took my goddaughter to a preseason game, and she's a big Jonathan Taves fan, of course. She's young. And she said, I want to meet Tony Esposito. How cool is that? Now you have a whole younger generation, not only totally hyped about the guys on the ice, but the older stars, the ambassadors, too.
Well, it is. And I mean, Tony, I just saw Tony two nights ago, and he was just celebrating his 50th wedding anniversary. Yeah. He said, the last 2 years have been terrific, but he didn't say which last two.
He knows how to get in trouble in the car on the
exactly.
way home.
His wife, Marilyn, you know, just called it, she's a bird watcher. She watches him like a hawk.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
She's great. Marilyn's great.
Is there anything you want fans to know that's different this year or something that you wanted to say and you haven't had a chance to say recently?
No, I think just be excited about the new rookies and the kids we have on the ice. The defense is going to be great, and we're looking forward to a terrific season and go out and have fun, because I know the players are.
I love the fact that Brian Campbell came back, and he could have made more money elsewhere, but he wanted to be here.
Didn't that show the character of the individual? And he's going to be great in the locker room, but he realized that Chicago, he liked the fans, and it's a place he wanted to raise his two children. And what better than Western Springs that they can walk to school and be part of the community? And that's something that he said, I never felt when I was in Florida. Take nothing away from Florida, but this is not Chicago, and that was that.
Now, you are, for all the success you've had and for everything you do here in Chicago, you're a fairly relaxed guy. And I know there's times you're not. But I'm curious, how do you work in Coach Q's world? Because we love Coach Q. He's on the show next hour. I mean, do you have much interaction with Q? Because I don't know if you know this about Q. He's a tad wound up at times.
No, but I like to kid him about the different, you know, ads he does for Binny's, you know, Beverage Depot.
Sure,
and so
sure.
I, you know, I kid him about, you know, how much makeup does he have to put on before he shoots?
You got to remember that one, Steve.
And he is closing in. Now, listen, nobody's going to be able to catch Scotty Bowman, right? I mean, the lead's too big. But he's closing in on epic numbers on every level of coaching. It seems like every game there's another new coaching record for him.
Well, I think the people take it for granted because he's had such a winning percentage, especially the big games and what he's like. And people talk about younger players. Well, when he came in, look how young the Blackhawks were. I mean, he's going on his ninth year, and we had a very young team then. So we have a young team now. But, I mean, that just shows you he's good with younger players. He's good with older players and with veterans. But that's what the adaptability plus how he uses as assistant coaches, as a team, and you never hear the word I out of them, too. It's always the players. And plus, what's nice about it, if someone has a bad game, he never says it publicly. He does it behind closed doors.
Yeah, that's the right way to go. Before you get out of here, I think we ought to talk about youth hockey for a second, because one of the great impacts of the Blackhawks' success has been an absolute explosion of youth hockey in Chicago. Man, if there's one legacy that it'd be great for you to leave for is that. I mean, not just growing the brand and growing the product, but the fact that the NHL ought to be thanking you because you're growing hockey.
Well, you know, it's interesting. Generally, on the national figures, when national televised games, which tonight will be on, 25% of the public is out of Chicago. So if they have 4 to 5 million people, I mean, you're having over a million people watch these games.
Right.
And what you also have is, we talk about youth hockey, but the amount of girls and women that are playing. I mean, 40% of the Blackhawk fan base are women, and there's a lot of those women that are on the ice, and that they're coming, and they're, Andrea, as you said, you know, your goddaughter. I mean, they want to play and they want to be part of it. They're excited about it, and it's a great game to watch.
I don't remember that being that way in the old days. I mean, it was always 80-20 men.
Yeah, I mean, the ladies' room, there's never a line.
Yeah, that's
first
true.
Off, Rocky, I told you, that's not your line.
Exactly. No, and the Blackhawks, too, champions in creating programs that provide equipment, uniforms, hockey sticks, pucks to children who otherwise, and students who otherwise might not be able to afford it.
Well, that's what's nice about with the new Blackhawk Community Center, where there'd be no one that can't afford to come on and. But as you said, with equipment and instruction, and we'll get them from point A to point B to get them to the rink, because that's the biggest problem is how do I get to the rink and tie in to many of the public schools do not have the programs that they used to have, and that we can fulfill that. And you work with Boys and Girls Clubs and different community-based organizations. It's going to be exciting, and it's something that is to look forward to.
In these troubled times we live in, there's nothing like the great distraction of another great hockey season, so thanks for that. But I got to believe these troubled times are good for the liquor business.
Well, you know, and it's not bad. I mean, if the Cubs keep playing these late games, I guarantee we have another round of drinks.
It's great to see you. My best to your family, but it's always great to see you. And thanks for stopping in on Roe Show, which I know you do all the time as well. But you know how much we appreciate the partnership, and we're looking forward to a great season. And I'm telling you, I got a feeling, kids. I got a feeling. I think it's going to be a great year.
Well, thank you. Appreciate you having me on.
Rocky Wirtz.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Dean Richards joins us from Channel 9.
Citizens of the world.
Some of the world's greatest entertainers are here tonight.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I present to you.
And tonight, guess what? It's going to be Dean.
Yeah, honey. You know I love you more than what I should.
Live from Channel 9, somewhere in the newsroom.
Bleary-eyed again.
It looked like there'd be a game tomorrow night. It looked like all Cubs fans would be walking around Chicago today doing this. I knew they were going to lose. Told you they were going to lose. They always lose. They're going to ruin it for me.
I totally had that feeling for quite a few innings last.
Yeah, like eight. Like the first eight. So, but not so much.
Wow.
In case you slept through it or missed it for some reason. It's a glorious sports day in Chicago. The
sure
Hawks
is.
Open tonight, and the Cubs score 4 in the ninth to eliminate the Giants. 6-5 the final, and now they wait for the Dodgers or the Washington Nationals, and that would start at Wrigley. You win. Dave, Sunday?
Saturday.
Saturday?
Saturday. Yes.
If only there was some place we could hear Coach Q talk about the opener tonight.
Coming up in mere seconds.
What?
Do you have a Coach Q question when he gets on?
Me?
Yeah.
I'm really mostly interested in mustache grooming questions.
Mustache grooming? Put you down for one of those. All right. So who is Kim Kardashian suing and why?
She is suing a website. I'm just so glad that she hasn't heard our segment the last... the last week or so.
It would be fun for me if I just had like an Divvy bike when she was in town and I could just ride by and ring a bell.
We'd get sued for being stupid. She is suing a gossip website that ran a story last week saying that her robbery was fake, Steve.
Yeah, well, there was a lot of those going on.
And that she lied about the assault. She's suing, what is the website? MediaTakeout.com.
One of my favorites.
Said that...
what the hell is Media Takeout?
This is the best thing that could have ever happened to them because nobody knew who they were. Yeah. Says she was traumatized by Le Thieves and then victimized a second time by Le Website.
Both are Le Bad. well, we hope she's okay. Rod Stewart has kids. I'm not making this up. Has kids aged 5 to 50. And I think plus or minus a year, that's the range of age of kids.
Because so many people think he's sexy.
Yes, but at his age, I think he's about my mom's age.
He's 71.
71.
Okay, he's a couple years younger than my mom, as far as you know. How does he get knighted? Because you got to bend down for that.
He apparently bent down, as we say in the English language, and then got right back up again. I just find funny that now he's Sir Rod. Doesn't that sound like a weird porn name?
Yes, it does. I had not thought of it until this very second.
Sir Rod, the pool boy, is here.
Gong-a-tong, gong-a-tong, tong. Kevin Hart got a tiny star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame.
You can barely see it. It's so cute. It's right outside of a shoe store on Hollywood Boulevard, which is significant because... that's what he was doing as a profession before he turned to comedy full time. And he's had 3 movies out this year that have brought in more than $1 billion worldwide, right along to Central Intelligence, Secret Life of Pets. He's got a stand-up comedy movie that opens on Friday that I saw last night that actually is pretty funny, Steve, but that's not a review. I would never review anything before Friday.
No.
The movie is called What Now?
Does he have a love interest in the movie?
You know what? There's kind of a funny James Bond spoof. It's not just like a regular comedy movie that's just the comedy. It starts off like a spoof of James Bond. Where he and
Does it really, or do you just like saying the word spoof?
I do like saying the word spoof, but it starts off as a spoof with Halle Berry.
Wow,
starts off like a James Bond. They're in a big playing high stakes poker, and he gets into. It's pretty funny. The whole beginning of the movie is pretty funny and so different. And he escapes to the arena where he's playing. It's a big outdoor arena where the Philadelphia football team plays. He plays an outdoor football arena and does pretty funny stand-up. But anyway, he got a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame, which is nice. I like Kevin Hart a lot.
Yeah, I do too.
He's pretty funny. And
You've actually been trapped in a tiny car with him.
I have been in a little clown car with him, which he calls a limo. Most people, just... have their knees up and their chin.
Right. It's an 18-wheeler to Kevin.
Not comfortable.
You have a list of movies you're featuring today that feature the Cubs or Wrigley Field in it.
Well, just because, we got to wait till Saturday now for more exciting Cubs action to give us a heart attack. I'm going to say go into your DVD collection, pull out a Ferris Bueller's Day Off. And, enjoy not only all of Chicago, but, one of the great Wrigley Field scenes of all time. Pull out a Rookie of the Year. A lot of good Cubs action in that one. There's the Jim Belushi movie, Taking Care of Business. That's very Cubs-centric. A lot of good stuff in there. That one doesn't hold up as well as the first two. There's The Breakup with Vince Vaughn and Jennifer Aniston, which is what they did shortly after they... made that movie. Really, really, really funny scenes in Wrigley Field between Vince Vaughn and Jon Favreau. So, plenty.
And a League of Their Own, too, right? Didn't they film a little portion
some
of
that? A portion of League of Their Own is at Wrigley Field.
Cool.
Back to the Future, too. You know, you can go back and see the scene where not predicted, but in the future is reported that the Cubs won the World Series. The movie missed it by a year, but looks like, it's going to be a little more prophetic this year than it was last year. So, you know, there are some good Cub choices. What I really loved last night after the win were, I follow a lot of the A-list celebrities because, Steve, that's my life.
That's your job, man.
That is my profession, my job. But my favorite of all the celebrity A-list tweets last night was from 87-year-old Bob Newhart. He's in what looks to be his family room of his house. He lives in Beverly Hills. On the big screen TV, you see it's the end of the game. Little Bob Newhart, holding up a big W flag, saying, "I'm 87 years old. I'm getting too old for this." Really, really cute.
And by the way, before we break, Sandberg, this is your favorite celebrity of all time, Bob Newhart?
Yes, absolutely, hands down. No one better. So
he is the greatest guy, and
he is a great guy. But can anybody figure out Sandberg?
I don't think. I think it's very simple. I don't like Jennifer Aniston. I love Bob Newhart. Most people would side with me, I think.
Listen,
I don't know anyone who doesn't like Bob Newhart.
I know somebody, and she is somewhere on this show.
Who just does not like Bob Newhart?
Yeah, and she may or may not be Greek.
What?
I didn't say it like that.
What'd you say?
I never thought he was funny. Was the quote.
Wow. I was young when he was in his heyday.
No, but listen, young. Listen, you weren't alive when he was in his heyday as a stand-up.
He's on Big Bang Theory now. He's hilarious.
Indiscretion. Oh, wait, that's not me.
Yeah, and here's the thing, too, that you're, and I love Ellen, too, but Ellen, and I think she'd admit this, she stole Newhart's act.
Well, very much, I guess.
I'm telling you, from a professional's viewpoint, she does that vibe, that backtrack, that breaking down the point you are and going backwards and thinking about it. And the phone stuff she used to do is a core part of her act.
To God?
Whomever she calls. She's calling people left and right.
A lot of people influenced by Bob Newhart.
Way I was influenced by Carrot Top.
Bob Newhart was at the Chicago Theater. I went backstage.
Pepe Le Pew.
To say hi to him. Jeff Garland was backstage.
Yeah.
Nervous, giddy to meet Bob Newhart. He was so excited to meet one of his heroes. Bonnie Hunt tweeted a picture of herself and Ronnie Santo saying, "I know the great Ron Santo is cheering alongside my sweet dad in heaven. Hashtag angels in the outfield, go Cubs." Another sweetheart.
Very nice.
Bonnie Hunt.
By the way, want to name drop before we go? Mindy Rickles, Don Rickles' daughter, is doing stand-up and doing very well. She's doing some shows in Vegas. She's going to be on tomorrow or Friday. I don't know. She's on this week at some point. It's tomorrow. And I sat with Bob Newhart and his family at Mindy's wedding.
Wow.
Huh?
How about that?
There's a name drop story for you. All right, buddy. We'll talk to you later.
At that wedding, did they go, "Do you, hockey puck, take this man to be your..."
No, but true story. Rickles gets up at like 11:30 and does like 10 minutes of free stand-up at the reception.
At the reception? Yeah. Was it filthy?
It was not what the bride would have ordered, but she knew it.
The Steve Cochran Show.
Well, it's been too long. Time for the Coach Q Show. Sponsored by Hooters. The original wing joint. You know what I like to say about Hooters? It's not just a restaurant. It's a way of life. Out here in the fields. Q is a very macho grown man to another very macho grown man. Can I say this to you? I've missed you.
I miss you too.
Wow. That's the most sensitive moment you're going to get from us all season long. How are you? How was your summer?
It was all right. It was good. It was did a lot of things, and obviously had the World Cup, and now we're back here. So it has been fun. Certainly targeted the beginning of the season here with a big game here tonight against a team that we faced last year with a little sour taste in our mouth. So it gets an important game to kick us off here today.
Congratulations on the World Cup, by the way. Dave, say hi to Q.
Morning, Coach. How are you?
Morning, Dave.
So as you've rejoined the team and you look at these guys in terms of conditioning, in terms of having had the summer off, everybody look good and ready to go.
No, here. They've all let themselves go.
No, that's...
Taves is 3.25. It's unbelievable.
I don't think so. But they've had more time, a little time to get healthy and get ready for the season.
Well, we know we're all healthy and ready to go. We had, Desi got hit with a puck late in the St. Louis game. Otherwise, we would have had a full crew here. So we're, we're anxiously looking forward to getting this game and our season started. Everybody's fresh. Hosts had a great World Cup. Johnny played great. Kaner played well. Crow did a good job as well. So I think we've got a little bit of a head start in the guys that were out there playing. And I think the rest of the guys came here with battling for jobs. Our young guys came in here with something to show and something to prove and, made it tough on us in making some decisions here. So now we've got some new guys in our lineup here. And I think their quickness and their speed and their ability offensively can help us. So we're looking forward to that. We got a nice kid on the back end, the Forslund kid that defensively had a couple of real special games here in the preseason. We love him down the road, see how he's going to play and grow initially here with our team. And so there's some things that we're looking forward to seeing and some things we're not sure about, but that's what these young guys bring us. They bring us enthusiasm and I think their quickness and their willingness to get better every day is going to make us better as we go along here.
What about Tyler Mott?
Mott's been really good. We like the way he plays. He's useful both sides of the puck. He's got a great shot, real smart player, got some real good speed to his game, can play with anybody, can kill penalties. I'm going to start with Krugs, and we tried him with Johnny, and we tried him with Anisimov and Kane. So we put him in a lot of different situations, and I think as we go along here, we'll see them all, but commend him on having a real good camp.
Is there an advantage for a kid like Mott or Schmaltz who's played college hockey at a high level versus guys who played in the juniors, or does it depend on the individual?
I think it's the individual. I think that's always going to be the debate, what player is better. They come out of junior. I think the kids that come out of college are a little bit older. But if they're the same age, given the same ingredients, I think they get a little bit more schooling. When I say schooling, they play more games in junior, but they get a little bit more mature when they go to college. So it's comes down to the player, his abilities, his strengths, and the opportunity that's out in front of them. But we'll let the player tell us and dictate to us where he's best suited to start or play. But his continuous play or continue on improving is going to dictate how much and the quality that he's going to get. But the opportunity this year for our young guys has never been better to move up in the lineup and get some good ice time and then eventually play maybe on our top six forwards.
This will be fun for Weideman this year. Two of the great names in hockey, great last names in hockey, are now Blackhawks, Schmaltz and Tutu, right?
Yeah,
Schmaltz and Tutu, come on.
Yeah, it's fun
for your face.
Tutu's come here. He's got some good experience. He's a great character guy. Gives us some speed, and we're looking for that type of thing on the energy line. He's going to be playing with a couple young kids tonight, so we'll be interested to see how well they do. But certainly that line, you're going to notice him out there.
It seems like Tutu's been around forever. He's got to be, what, 75, 80 years old?
No, he's a young guy.
We're not a young guy. He's young to you and me, but he's got some miles on him.
Yeah, he's got some good experience for sure.
There you go. All right, so with a hammer off tonight, who gets that job?
Well, we got 8D. We think we can all play. And we're going to play Dunks and Van Riemsdyk are going to be together. We got Kempe playing with Seabrook tonight. We got Forsling with Campbell. So, the night off will be Rosie and Hammer, obviously. And next game, we're going to have a decision to make because we feel we got 8 guys that can all play.
All
play against good players. So we're deeper than we've been. And I think the balance of ice time in the back end is going to be a little bit more even, Steven. And so maybe Dunks wind up and not be exposed to playing significant minutes like he's been in the past.
The Blues, like yourselves, a little bit different roster than the teams that met in the playoffs last spring, but I guess you still look at number 91 over there, and you say they're not that different than they were, right?
Tarasenko.
Yeah. You got Tarasenko and Stasny's line. They got two good lines offensively. They got a very good defense that's very mobile and agile. They got a four-man attack coming at you all the time. Their power play is always good. They got some guys on the back end that shoot it. So it's we always feel St. Louis is always tight. There's not a lot of room. The scoring chances are usually a bit lower than when we play most teams. But you got to fight for your space out there, and they always check well. So they play a real organized structure to their team game. So we expect that type of thing right off the bat here tonight. So let's make sure we're prepared to play a simple and a hard game. And we get our lines are a little bit more predictable with Kane and Nisimov with the bread man together and Taser with Hos and Panera and Panic together. So it's a... It's our group here with some young guys in the other lines, and I think they got an opportunity to play and move up as we go along.
Yeah, and I got to tell you, this is how deep this team is. We talked to Coach for the last 5-6 minutes, and we just barely touched on Panarin, who was one of the great stories in hockey last year. It's a good problem to have, Coach, trying to figure out how everybody's going to get on the ice.
Well, he's been really good. We love the way he's progressed. You got to love his attitude. He's got that contagious smile, and he wants the puck. He wants to be out there, and he's dangerous when he gets it, and he finds a way to get it. So he's, that line could be special, and I think, our opponents usually have a lot to be concerned with when they're out there, and maybe some things can open up elsewhere along their lineup as well.
Panarin still pretending he doesn't speak English?
It's getting better.
Yeah.
It's getting better.
But like almost when you're upset with him?
Almost don't need an interpreter. When I'm upset with him, which is rarely.
Yeah, that's when he goes back to the motherland.
I just got to look at him. He knows what I'm saying.
That's the thing about Q. Q stares in Russian. I don't know if you know that or not. That's one of his skills.
He went to my mom's school of stairs.
Coach, I'll be there tonight. I'm looking forward to it. I got a great feeling about this year, and have fun.
All right. Enjoy. Thank you.
Thanks, buddy. That's Coach Joel Quenneville.
I think he really meant it, don't you, Dave, when he said he missed you?
Yeah, I do too, but he was definitely uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Well, if you asked him, yeah, I believe the question was, did you miss me?
It was a little needy.
So what's he going to say?
Yeah, it was a little needy. Yeah, it's a little bit of that going on. It's 8:34. We'll come back with a big story next on 720 WGN.
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
The 3-1 lined into right field. That'll rattle around. Bryant scores easily. Rizzo held it third. And it's a 2-run ball game with nobody out in the ninth. Back up the middle and through. Rizzo scores. Here's Zobrist, and the Cubs have tied it here in the ninth. Baez singles back up the middle. Hayward's being waved around, and Chicago has taken a 6-5 lead. Cubs are a strike away from moving on in the postseason. And the Chicago Cubs are moving on to the National League Championship Series.
Eight bad baseball innings, followed by that ninth. You tell me this isn't the Cubs here.
Baseball season's underway. Well, you better get ready for a brand new day.
Special assist from Bruce Bochy.
Hey, Chicago, what do you say? The Cubs are gonna win today.
Joining us now, Captain Negative, Mark Carmen. Carmen's on the show yesterday, acting like the world had come to an end. Where were you?
Never a doubt, Steve.
Where were you last night after eight innings? Because I was thinking of you, because I figured after eight innings, you would have been the leader of the pessimists.
Well, I watched the game, Steve, in Studio A at WGN Radio in the dark with my arms folded across my chest. And by the eighth inning, I think I was under the table. But, you know, at the end of the day, that was just I was faking it. I never lost confidence down 1-0, 3-1, 5-2, 5-3. I was always feeling like this was exactly what was going to happen.
I bet your flinch was worse than a Sunday afternoon with Hampo being cause.
I mean, that's now you're at a level that I'm uncomfortable with speaking on. But, you know, Adam Hogue did walk in at about the fifth inning, and he kind of, like, opened the door halfway. He's like, can I enter? Like, yeah, come on. This is Joe Maddon, Steve, said that he was thinking about Johnny Cueto in Game 5 in the dugout and how they never have hit Cueto in their life. So if Joe Maddon was in paranoid state, you know, the most positive man going, I think it's okay that that I was feeling the same way.
Well, let me ask you what I've asked Dave and what I asked who else do we have on? Oh, Kevin, this morning. and that is, should Bochy have pulled Matt Moore? I say no. The guy's in a groove. I don't care that he had 120 pitches. You let him see if he can finish it.
Yeah, I'm the most paranoid keep your pitcher healthy, Kerry Wood and Mark Pryor guy ever. But you keep him healthy for that moment in time. In June, it matters. It's one game. An elimination game where the Cubs can't touch this guy, I thought, you know, great manager, Bruce Bochy, but I agree with you. I thought he blew it last night. Just at least let him start the inning. If somebody gets on, then you can go to the pen. I didn't get it.
I hurt my neck watching Carmen change direction there.
Yeah, Dave's in a brace.
No, Well, you do have to keep in mind, this is a guy who had Tommy John, 2 years ago, I think, and missed a season. So,
well, he's got plenty of time to rest up now, doesn't he?
Well, he does. He's got a lot of time. All right, so you were talking about how everything went wrong for the Cubs on Monday night. When you look at the ninth inning last night and the move by Joe Maddon to pinch hit for Addison Russell, and we haven't talked a lot about this morning because of time, but here's a guy who drove in 95 runs for you during the season, and yet you look at the matchup, you don't like the matchup, you force the opposing manager's hand in this case where I took out Romo, he put in Will Smith, and then, of course, what does Maddon do? He counterpunches, he goes to Wilson Contreras, who delivers the game-winning hit. I mean, those are to pinch hit for a guy who's driven in 95 runs is not your run-of-the-mill garden variety managerial move, but it works. I mean, you look at that and it works.
Dave, I completely 100% agree.
What?
I thought it was genius.
What?
Yeah. Well, I am on board 1,000 with you right here. And here's another thing to the Bruce Bochy bad ninth inning. Bruce Bochy, you want Chris Coughlin versus Sergio Romo over Wilson Contreras versus Will Smith. Wilson Contreras was 3-for-5. Wilson Contreras has been great all year. Chris Coughlin has been absent all year. And I think that Maddon was betting, he didn't know for sure, obviously, but I think he was betting that I'm going to get Contreras up here. They're going to go, he's going to take Romo out and bring in a lefty, and then I'm going to have Contreras. And he absolutely gambled on it, and he won. I don't think he really wanted Coughlin up there, but I think he bet on Bochy doing what he did, and he was right. Joe Maddon gets huge props for that.
I think, you know, he should attempt to back Coughlin every time, because I lost about 10 pounds just when I saw him standing on the screen. You and I, Carmi, are both anti-Hayward. Now, I shouldn't say anti-Hayward. We were a little bit anti-Hayward.
We are. No,
We are. We have. I am, too. And you know what? I would love to see him stick with Baez, Soler, Contreras, and Almora. But do you see him doing exactly what he did last night, kind of messing with this lineup throughout the NLCS?
I mean, listen, when you can't even get a bunt down, I mean, the Giants, he bunted into a double play, and I don't know how their all-star shortstop, gold glove shortstop, Brandon Crawford, throws that ball away. But somehow, some way, Jason Hayward ends up on second base and scores the game-winning run. I mean, to me, forget Soler, Andrea. Let's get Wilson Contreras in the outfield. Yeah. He's as good, or actually a better outfielder, mm-hmm, than Jorge Soler, and he's been way hotter at the plate. So if you're catching David Ross, I would have Contreras in the outfield, and I'd put Zobrist in right. But I don't think Jason Hayward is going to sit against righties. Against lefties, I think he will.
Where will you watch Game 1?
It's a great question, Steve. I'm very much hoping that I will have the privilege of a credential that is up in the air. I have not talked to Dave Ennett privately about that.
Hold on, let's do it publicly right here.
I'd say you're...
Will you credential Mark Carmen for the NLCS?
That's not up to me, Steve. That's up to Major League Baseball.
But will you put him up for credential?
Well, that deadline has already passed.
Right, but that's my point.
Yes.
Will you make that call to get him credentialed?
Well,
will you call in favors that you've built up over a career as a major sports figure?
You can't call now. The credential application was already submitted.
Dave, you're Dave Ennett.
I can't say whether Mark's name was on it or not.
You are Dave Ennett. You can get anything done in sports you want.
How about a twofer, like a buy one, get one free?
Sports and hooch, Dave. These are your areas.
Yeah.
Sports and liquor. If you want Carmen in that box, you're going to have him there.
As I crawled under the table... processing where I'll be. Let me
by the way,
say this.
Hayward's time to first was 4.12 seconds. That's all.
Carmen's right, though. He got lucky. He got lucky even being a
good throw. He's out by a step. Here's a question.
What's a normal time to first? Because like in wiffle ball, I can go home to first in about 4 days.
Oh, that's a good point. I didn't think of that.
Yeah.
You probably have a better batting average than Hayward.
At this point, yeah.
Steve, what would be your recommendation to Cub fans out there that have, you know, halfway decent, if not great, seats, and you know, they can sell them for a lot of coin? What are you telling those people?
Well, it's two arguments, and here it is: if you are a diehard, this is our year. It's got to be our year. I can't miss a single pitch of it. Obviously, you have to go, but. If you somehow have lucked into tickets because your Uncle Phil died and left them to you in his will, or you're a fan and you're certainly going to be there for late in the series and late in the World Series, but maybe you could miss the first two games, oh, yeah, it's a profit center. Yeah, well, I'm telling you, make money on the first two if you can, sure, yeah. But if you love this team, you'll show up.
I mean, I think you can have a nice time in the last row, really enjoying it, and stand with the true diehards. That would be my recommendation.
Here's my question. I'm dead serious about this. This is the National League Championship Series. We all lived through 2003.
Mm-hmm.
Where's Bartman going to be? We know he still lives
Great
in town.
Question.
He should be in a skybox.
He should be in a skybox, and he should get a standing ovation mm-hmm. for all the crap he's gone through.
Yeah.
To me, he'd be a good luck charm to have him in the building.
He won't do it, though.
No, he won't.
He just won't do it.
I just want, but I know he listens a lot to this station, and I think he listens to this show. And with all seriousness, I stopped asking him for an interview years ago, but with all seriousness, I hope he enjoys every minute of it. I don't even know if he can enjoy the Cubs anymore, but I hope he does. I hope he finds some enjoyment in it. And if the Cubs are going to win this for anybody, win it for three people, Santo, Ernie, and Bartman.
There you go.
That's fair. And it was the ugliest moment in the history of the ballpark by a gazillion miles.
I don't know. I remember when you used to produce Cap Show. Those are some bad moments, too.
That's true. Very, very well put. But Cub fans, we all owe Steve Bartman an apology for what happened that night. It was when you watched Chasing Hell and see it come back and how it all went down.
Yeah, that's rough.
It just ripped. It's gross.
All right, good to see you consistent. Yeah. Chet Kopick's on line two for you. Put you on hold. That's Mark Carmen, who's won nothing for his appearance.
Blackhawks Radio.
720 WGN.
Uh-huh. The Steve Cochran Show presents Hawk.
Chicago.
Opedia.
We may get a fracas here before it all ends.
A what?
Sponsored by Wintrust Community Banks. Welcome back, Dave Ennett.
Well, let's welcome a bunch of new guys to the Blackhawks. Figure this would be a good place to start. You've heard us reference all the new faces. There are plenty of them as the Blackhawks prepare to open the season tonight against the St. Louis Blues. Six rookies on the Blackhawks roster, though. Two have played for the Hawks before, albeit briefly. Number 38, Ryan Hartman, the West Dundee native, who's played in eight games the last 2 years. And number 48, Vinny Hinostroza, who appeared in seven games last season. Number 64, Tyler Mott, starred at the University of Michigan, opting to forego his senior year to sign with the Blackhawks. He was all Big Ten last year and a finalist for the Hobey Baker Award. And number 8, Nick Schmaltz, a Madison, Wisconsin native, also played college hockey at Jonathan Toews' alma mater, the University of North Dakota. Hawks also have two players who are NHL rookies but played overseas. Both are defensemen. Number 42, Gustav Forsling, just 20 years old from Sweden. Number 6, Michael Kempney, a Czech Republic native who played last season in the KHL. Brian Campbell back in his familiar number 51, though he's hardly new to the Blackhawks. And Jordan Tutu is the other new veteran. The 33-year-old, Steve, did we clarify that? 33 years old.
Yeah, but he started playing in the NHL when he was 4.
Well, that's true. He joined his 4th NHL team, and of course, Tutu will wear number 22.
Seems right.
That's our Hawkopedia for today.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
9:12 now. A lot of baseball talk this morning, a lot of hockey talk. Because I love you listeners, no Bears talk. And limited amount of Trump talk. But there's a book I want you to get. And you know what I always say, get 2 copies, careless you'll lose one. I want you to get 3 copies, because I want you to know, I want you to get one for you. I want you to get a backup copy, and I want you to share one with your friends. I think it's an important story to tell. Joe Black, more than a Dodger, Martha Joe Black is here. And Martha Joe, nice to meet you. I know you've known Andre for a while, but it's great to have you here. And what a wonderful thing you've done here to tell your dad's story.
Oh, thank you so much. It was definitely a pleasure. I co-wrote it with Chuck Schaffner, who's an Iowa sports writer. And I wanted to tell my dad's story because he was such a good man. It was more than baseball for me.
Well, you've worked for the White Sox for how long?
Oh, 19 years.
And Jerry Reinsdorf writes about your dad. Yes. On the back of this book, I just want you to hear this. Joe Black was one of the most unique men I've ever known. And I think most people know this, but and Dave, you certainly know this. When the Bulls were winning all those championships in the 90s, don't get me wrong, Jerry loved it. But Jerry, at his core, is a baseball guy. Mm-hmm. He's always been a baseball guy. And he loved 2005 so much. And my hope is, because Jerry's not getting any younger, none of us are, the White Sox need to get him another one.
Correct.
Right?
Yes, because I have an empty hand to have some jewelry on. Right. Right. Right.
Continuing, Jerry Reinsdorf on your dad. His greatest pleasures in life were his children, Martha, Joe, and Chico, and doing good things for people who had no place else to look for help. And knowing what I know about how much guys made in your dad's day, the fact that he was reaching out to help other people says everything he didn't know about him.
No, that's very true. I mean, as you mentioned, all the players, regardless of black, white, or Hispanic, they all had jobs in the off season, and my dad did that. I will tell you that my dad did get, which is the biggest thing, a college education. It took my father 8 years to graduate from school, but he played in the Cuban Winter League, so he took some time off. Then he played in the Negro Leagues and the Baltimore Eli Giants. And from there, he was like, you know, we have to help people because somebody reached out to him. I mean, when my dad was with Brooklyn, Preacher Rowe was like, oh, this is Joe Black. Let's get the clubhouse guy to get your stuff. Preacher Rowe's from the South, and he was Caucasian. You would not think he would have reached out to my father, but he did. And that's how my dad learned from that and saying, okay.
To pay it forward.
Yeah, you have to pay it forward because if you don't, you're going to be left and no one's going to be there for you.
The thing I think is interesting, and Andre was talking about this earlier this morning before you got here, the racism that your dad saw, and this doesn't diminish a minute of what Jackie Robinson went through.
Correct.
But what Jackie Robinson went through, and it's well documented, as horrific as it was, because Jackie was first, there was a spotlight on him all the time. What your dad and the other early African-Americans who played ball went through, it just doesn't get talked about. And it was kept quiet. And there were only, I think, when your dad pitched in the series, weren't there only 6 teams in all of baseball that had integrated?
Correct. I mean, I think the Yankees were all Caucasian at the time. There's a famous picture of my dad.
Cubs hadn't integrated. White Sox had.
Yeah.
Cubs had.
No, they didn't. I think because Minnie came later, Minnie Mendoza for the White Sox.
Right.
And, Larry Doby was with the Indians, so he was after Jackie. But no, there wasn't a lot. My dad came 5 years after Jackie broke the color barrier, and everyone confused people by saying, oh, well, your dad was the first to pitch in the World Series, and my dad was not. He was the first to win a World Series game because there was very few. But you definitely have to acknowledge everything they did. And if you think about it now, because there were no cell phones to videotape things, so there was nobody putting it in social media or doing anything, and that's why it was somewhat kept secret, which is sad. And that was one thing my dad was never angry about what he went through. It was something that he learned from.
What you think about it? I mean, it was Don Newcomb, Satchel Paige, and your dad. Those are the first three. You think about it. Okay, you're the pitcher. Okay, and you're black, and it's 1955, 56, whatever mm-hmm. the year was.
Sure.
Okay, maybe you got a little safety on the mound, though. You're hearing things about your family and your mother and this and that, scream from the fence,
yeah.
screaming stuff, throwing stuff. But you got to go hit.
Right. Oh, yeah.
And that guy's got a baseball. And I'm sure your dad came home with some bruises from that, too. So it wasn't, there was some physical involved. Plus, slide in. Those guys used to wear spikes a foot long.
Oh, yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. And you try to tag a guy out at first, your pitcher covering first, you know you're going to get cut.
I mean,
you know, there was a threat. My point is, it wasn't just playing a game. He was under threat.
It was
dodging
your life.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
You had to protect your life. I mean, they had to be a little bit of Muhammad Ali weaving and bobbing, excuse me,
right.
to get through sure. to not be tackled. Now, I will tell you the little secret, though. Back in the day, because there was no Players Association or anything, that pitchers knew how to back you off the plate because they threw at your head.
Right.
So right. there was a way that, you know, people were talking crap, so to speak, to you, that you could take care of that. My
right.
father's the worst song, I think they played it a lot at Yankee Stadium when my dad would pitch, was a song called Old Black Joe.
Oh.
And I will have to say, oh. my dad had the album at our house, and when he passed away, we did not pick it up, and I think I heard it when I was like 10. I do not recall the song, but that was, my dad hated that song.
Well, of course he did.
Sure. You know, even when he was younger in school, people, when they were making fun of him, because, you know, they grew up in Plainfield, New Jersey, which is all integrated, but they would say, oh, Black Joe or whatever, so... It was just something that was derogatory.
It's just hard for kids now to imagine that kind of racism existed, especially right. in something as all-encompassing as sports.
You tell such an amazing story. Martha and I were on a boat with a mutual friend of all of ours, John Yanover, and you were telling these stories, and I was fascinated by your story. Loved the book. I also was fascinated. I love the baseball story, but the off-the-field part, too, which piqued my interest, he was a single dad.
Yeah. No, which is in Paradise Valley, Arizona, in the mid-70s. That was probably not cute, being a 50-year-old African-American man with a 5-year-old daughter. You're like, huh, and you have a little notoriety? Why do you have this kid with you?
Right.
And my dad's like, I can do it. He didn't fight for me to prove that my mother was a bad mother, because she was not. But he's like, I can give my child love, loyalty, and a part of the education that she needs to go on and to move forward. It's more than a check. And I think a lot of, and I will be honest, I think a lot of African-American, Caucasian, and Hispanic men are good fathers, and we do not give them any credit. And you need to give somebody credit sometimes, because when we're at work and somebody says you did a good job, you want to do more.
Well, here's the thing. I don't want to cheap this out, but for lack of a better pop culture reference, Cosby in The Cosby Show, what that did in the 80s.
Dr. Huxtable.
It was great. Now, it's hard to use Cosby as a positive reference now for obvious reasons. But that's why Black-ish is such a good show.
Right.
Yeah, you watch Black-ish. I mean, there's some cliched comedy nonsense that goes on. But black folks, white folks, brown folks, everybody wants the same thing. You want your kids to have a chance to do better than you. You want them to go
exactly.
to school. You want everybody to be safe. It doesn't matter what color you are.
No, that's correct. I mean, that was a dream. I mean, when I was younger, since I'm in my 40s now, I swore to God, when I made $100,000, I was going to be rich as hell.
Right.
Now you're not even middle class, I heard. And I don't make that now. But, you know, you have to make
like
at least 130.
I like how you asked Jerry for a raise on the air
there. Just a little bit.
Well, you slip that in.
You know, but it is funny that I think a lot of young people don't see that there's greatness out there. I don't think a lot of young people know you should go for your dreams. I mean, my dad played 8 years in the minors and didn't get recognized. Played in the Cuban Winter League with Fidel Castro, by the way, who was a better basketball player than baseball player.
Is that right?
That's why he was not signed by anybody. Wow. Can you imagine how the world would be if he did get signed?
Yeah.
Things would have been different.
One NBA team could have changed the world.
Oh, totally changed the world. JFK would have been like, oh, I don't need to worry about Cuba.
Right.
I mean, it would have been perfect.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, it's definitely something that I think a lot of young people are angry about, things that they have no idea how good they have it.
The book, again, is called Joe Black, More Than a Dodger. Tommy Lasorda was in here the other day when I was gone, and Tommy's, I think, 89 now? Mm-hmm.
89.
Yeah. 89.
Tommy was like Ron Santo in a lot of ways. There was one color. In Tommy's case, it was blue, and he didn't see
only
black or white. But there's a great story in the book about another fellow Dodger, and it's Sandy Koufax, and what your dad did for Sandy Koufax.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of like Preacher Row would do it for my dad when Sandy came in. Nice young Jewish man, because, you know, keep in mind, Hank Greenberg was Jackie Robinson before Jackie.
Yeah.
Because of his religion.
Sure.
But I definitely believe my dad was like, oh, I'll show you around, Sandy. And they were great friends. It's a funny story that my dad did tell me, that my dad was walking across the street and Sandy ran across the street and covered my dad's eyes. My dad's like, "What? Who is this?" And then he turned around. He goes, "Oh, my God." And he was like, "Oh, my God, I saw you. I had to say hi to you." And they were great friends. And I have to admit, I did talk to Mr. Koufax myself when I was doing this book, and I had to tell him that I saw this picture of him, my father, at an event. And I said, "You know, Mr. Koufax, I have to tell you, I told my dad you were really good looking," and my dad was upset. He's like, "You think he's better looking than me, kid?" And I was like, "No, Dad, because I look just like you." He goes, "Oh, okay." And Mr. Koufax did laugh. So
oh,
he was
good,
not shy on
not,
that.
He's not known for having a
yes.
big laugh.
So yeah, I did get him to laugh, and I was very fortunate. Jane Levy, that wrote his bestseller, was kind enough to get in contact with him for me for the book.
You, again, great stories, Martha. I love the stories about Sandy and Muhammad Ali. I mean, you grew up with, not every yeah. day you're seeing these people in your home, but people like the champ. And was that difficult growing up, or did it kind of ease
no,
what your dad had to go through on your level?
I would honestly tell you, my father said to me every day, "You're no better than anybody, and nobody's better than you. So these are just Dad's friends." So Muhammad Ali, my godfather's Jesse Owens, they got to tell me to eat vegetables and to do the right thing. And don't forget to do your homework. And, you know, make sure you listen to your dad. You know, he knows what he's talking about when they go play golf or whatever. And I was like, "Oh, okay." So to me, they were just like Jim Smith living next door to you. They were no different. I mean, now that I'm older, and I was like, "Oh, I get it now." Do you know what I mean? But it was something
world-changing figures that had respect for your father.
Exactly. And that was real friendship. And I think that their loyalty to one another is amazing. And I will say, I do work for my father's friend, Mr. Reinsdorf, from Peter O'Malley, reaches out to me. Those are my dad's friends, and they care about me, and I'm very grateful.
You know, you've already talked about some of the core values, right? Love your family, be a great dad,
yes.
get an education if
mm-hmm.
you can. If you need to get a second job, get a job. It all comes down to one thing, be a good man.
Right. And I think that most men are good men, and we just don't hear enough about that. And we need to talk about that a little bit more.
Again, it's called Joe Black, More Than a Dodger. Last word from you, Andre, and then I want to ask you before you go, or just have you tell a story before you go, the one thing you really want people to get from the book.
Okay.
But first,
I wanted to ask you, now you're a baseball fan. I know
yes.
you work for the Sox, but you have to be a little bit excited about the fact of a possible World Series coming back.
She doesn't
Chicago.
Have to be.
I'm excited.
You're a baseball fan, though.
Yes, I'm a huge baseball fan. I'm very excited that Chicago gets to have, knock on wood, could be another magical year. Chicago, when I moved here in 93, and Michael Jordan was playing because he did walk on water, as we all know, that Chicago is huge sports fan, totally huge. Mm-hmm. They like winners regardless. I will tell you, when we won the World Series in 05, people that were only Cub fans were like, "Okay, it's okay. Somebody got a ring," because we hadn't had that since Michael Jordan. And then the Blackhawks started. And so then everybody who wasn't a hockey
it's
fan became a
city.
Hockey fan. So
it's great
for the city. So hopefully more people will come here. We can try to get out of debt. You know.
No, it's not going to make the politicians any smarter.
No,
but
it won't.
Time,
it won't. And it won't
the
have
city.
Them hire anybody outside of the family. But it is hopefully something positive. I definitely think that if the Cubs go all the way and they are fortunate enough, because it's all about magic, and I definitely believe in that, that it will be great for the city. And I hope everybody's just happy and not angry, because I will be honest, there are some White Sox and Cubs fans that are quite angry.
Yes, they are.
With other people. And I've had people that happen to be politicians as well at one point were like, "Oh, well, your team's horrible." And I was like, "Yeah, but I do have jewelry. So until until you can tell me that you have jewelry, and second of all, that the Cubs even know who you are."
That's a great point,
don't
too.
Don't talk to me
about
it.
A great
be a
point.
Baseball fan.
It's a great point. Joe Black, More Than a Dodger. Maybe you've already said it, but is there one thing you really want people to get from the book?
I definitely want people to get that you should definitely live your dreams. Dreams are definitely possible. As Steve Harvey says, go jump. Jump for your dreams, because they do come true. And definitely help people. Be there for somebody and get an education, because that's one thing no one can ever take away from you.
Do something nice for somebody every day.
Yes.
Even if
pay
it's just
it forward.
Thing.
Absolutely. It's a great book.
Thank you.
Martha Jo Black. And again, Jerry, I know you listen occasionally. Spread it around, man. Come on. Martha Jo, it's time for a race. By the way, I said that. She didn't, Jerry.
Okay, thanks.
9:25, back after this on 720 WGN. It's 9:42. Bill and Wendy coming up at 10. As you know, Amy Cochran, one of the world's great people, works for a company called Autism Home Support. And does a great job for them. And they, as a company, do a great job for kids and families dealing with autism. And anytime I have a chance to talk with organizations that are working to make lives easier and, you know, find, cure is not the word I'd even look for at this point, steps in the right direction when it comes to taking care of families and kids with autism. I mean, you want to talk to them. Don't you want to talk to them? Of course you want to talk to them.
Always.
Keith McCormick's on the phone. Keith McCormick, Executive Director of Autism Speak Chicago. Good morning, Keith.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Well, it just threw me off when the band quit. You know, normally normally there's a band, you know. Well, what are you going to do? Hey, Saturday night, chip in for autism at the beautiful Euro Furniture location at 2145 West Grand. Tell me about the event.
This is going to be our inaugural year for this event, and we're really excited about it. You know, as you know, Autism Speaks does a lot of work to build awareness around the issues that impact families with autism. And so we have a big walk in May at Soldier Field, and it's got 20,000 people. But what we really wanted to do was kind of do a black tie gala event that is fun for a lot of people. We're going to have probably 200 or 300 people come out and just have a fun evening playing some blackjack, playing some poker, and of course we're going to be, you know, broadcasting, or we're going to have some of the Cubs coverage during the game. We're going to have some screens up in the room.
Yeah, which is smart, because a lot of times you have these events and they conflict with a major event in Chicago, and people go, hey, honey, I got to go to the bathroom again. And then somebody's outside, and they're making a call, or they're checking their smartphone. You're giving people an opportunity to enjoy the event and not run out of the room.
That's right. You know, and I mean, we kind of knew back when we were planning this that the Cubs were probably going to be in the playoffs. And we were like, well, but this is the date. We have the venue. We have everything else set up. What can we do? You know, let's still try to have this event, and but just make it accessible so that people can follow the game and follow what's going on. Because this is a moment in Chicago history that we all have to, you know, pay attention to. So, and we're aware of that. But we just want to make sure that people come out and have a good time. But also, you know, learn a little bit about the work that Autism Speaks does in Chicago and Illinois.
Again, Saturday night, Euro Furniture. What time?
The doors open for VIPs at 6 o'clock and then 6:30 for everyone else. And tickets are still available online if they go to www.chipinforautism.org.
Now, I'm going to be coming from another event when I come by this event, and the other event is not black tie. So you do mind if I just wear black shoes?
Yeah, sure. That's fine. Yeah. We're going to let you in no matter what.
I wouldn't go that far. I'd have security pat me down at least. And for all things Autism Speaks in Chicago, where do you send them?
That they can go to autismspeaks.org.
Right. And the great resources there all the time, anytime. Great. Have a great Saturday night. I'll see you then.
All right. Looking forward to it. See you then. Thank you so much.
Thanks. That's Keith McCormick, the Executive Director of Autism Speaks Chicago.
I know you're not, I don't know if you're doing this auction or not for them, but there's nobody better. This is so funny.
Taking money from rich people?
Yeah, Dave, you've seen this. Remember when the Hawks were in the playoffs? Was it the last time or the time before that? And it was the Stanley Cup playoff. They were
2 years ago.
Yeah, 2 years ago. And you said, all right, look, we're just going to make this simple. We all want to watch the game. Raise your hand. Everyone's going to donate $1,000. And I think they raised the most money.
And we're riding the car in 5 minutes.
That's the way you have to do it.
Yeah, if there's a collection of rich folks, I'm happy to take their money.
Right.
Yeah. So the problem is at a couple of things, and one event in particular stands out, some people didn't bid on items. And to kind of juice the bidding, I'd start the bidding.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
I ended up buying a couple of things I wasn't planning on buying.
Yeah. And you never shame people into it either,
which
is really nice.
No, not at all. You know, the greatest people are for these fundraisers, because they go on every night in the city, are the people that do show up to bid. And without exception, it's usually two or three tables that do all the bidding. And it's two or three couples that do all the bidding. And if not for them, it'd be, you know, a tough putt.
Very true.
But some really generous people show up. And I would just encourage anybody that goes to, whether it's the Autism Speaks event or any event, you know, I know you pay a lot to get into these things, but would it kill you to kick in a little more? Come on.
Well, don't you want to take something home from the event? Sure. Either tickets or, you know, a painting or something like that?
I'll follow you home if you pay enough money.
If you pay enough money, sure.
Yeah. Matter of fact, you pay enough money, I won't follow you home. Maybe that's the win. I'll see, if you don't pay enough money, I will follow you home. 9:47, we'll take a break, come back with my friend Mark DiCarlo celebrating his Chicago Cubs. And then Bill and Wendy at 10 on 720 WGN. 9:50, before we go to Mark DiCarlo in his Cubs hat, cockeyed, wandering around the San Francisco airport, screaming at the top of his lungs, a quick happy birthday to our friend Stephanie Menendez, who's technically our boss, but most times she's... Here's why Stephanie's dangerous, because most times you go, well, she's too nice to be the boss, but she will kick your tail, man.
Oh, man.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yesterday, we had an issue. She had an issue with the show. She very sweetly asked me to come into her office. I went in. She started throwing crap at me. It was unbelievable.
But then she'll offer you a piece of candy.
Right. And then just when you think she's dropped her guard down, right, you relax for a second, and she goes, never going to do it again. And I go, never going to do what? And then she throws her phone at me and a bunch of other things. So she's very tough.
By the way, Tommy Lasorda, did you hear when Tommy Lasorda was in and he went, that's your boss? Yeah. And she said, can I take a picture with you? Can I hug you? And he said, you can hug me all day long.
Yeah. And and that's
this was on the air.
She's
not
blushing.
It's interesting to bring that up because Stephanie and Tommy Lasorda are going to be in the Dells this weekend. So that's nice. Part of her birthday. Anyway, happy birthday.
Thank you, Steve. Thanks, Andre.
That's Dave. Happy birthday.
Happy birthday. Happy birthday.
So now you don't have to be nervous anymore. That's why I wanted you to be on the air.
Thank you.
Any right. birthday plans you have?
Well, I'm wearing Spanx today, so I'm a little sweaty, but I think I can still eat a lot of cake.
There you go, baby.
I wore, you know, the Spanx will keep it all in.
That's Stephanie.
By the way, you don't have to meet with her now.
Yeah. Yeah. Right,
you get
right.
a reprieve.
I wear Manx. It's a whole different deal. Mark DiCarlo, live from San Francisco. Good morning, buddy.
Good morning, Steve. How are you?
Listen to you there, Froggy. Were you up late yelling?
Turns out there were a lot of Cub fans at AT&T Park last night. And we all went out and we reveled and we celebrated maybe the most exciting baseball game I've ever seen in person.
Okay, now hold on. Let's take a deep breath. Because it's, I agree, thrilling finish, even though I gave up at the bottom of the eighth. Good timing. But the most exciting game you've ever seen in person? Ever?
Well, we were 6 foot.
Oh, no. Mark's been taken hostage. DiCarlo, are you there? Over.
He's still at his rave.
Well, you were listening to Mark DiCarlo's exclusive report. From the Cubs' victory celebration, he did sound like he was still in the middle of it, didn't he?
Maybe a Giant fan got him.
He's raving.
Oh, I bet that's what happened.
Don't you think?
Yeah, one of the Giant fans just cold-cocked him right there.
Probably.
4 runs in the ninth, and now I got to listen to this idiot?
Yeah. Most exciting game I ever saw?
Unbelievable.
Did you see Pat Tomasulo yesterday was handing out W signs, and he was telling people in San Francisco it stands for clean water? So they were San Francisco fans.
Oh, they started waving them?
Yeah,
they started
waving
those. That's kind of funny. All right, we'll take a break. Maybe we'll get Mark back, maybe not. But if we don't get him back, I just want you to know, Steve Harvey isn't giving you that kind of reporting. Eric and Kathy aren't bringing you those kind of stories. That was Mark DiCarlo exclusively and froggily from San Francisco.